Welcome to Just Pure Laughs, the podcast all about clean comedy. I'm your host, Dan McGowan. I grew up in an entertainment family and have been working as a clean comedian for nearly 30 years. My experience includes comedy clubs, corporate events, cruise ships, community events, military and theater shows, and more. I'm a winner in the Branson Clean Comedy Contest. I've appeared in TV commercials and theater productions and recently filmed a Dry Bar Comedy special that you can find over there at drybarcomedy.com. In many ways, I've seen it all and always seem drawn back to comedy that everyone can enjoy. Clean comedy. So, if you enjoy comedy that is suitable for all ages and just want to learn more about clean comedy, stick around because it's time for Just Pure Laughs. My guest today is comedian and magician Ron Giesek. Hi, Ron.
Hey, how are you, Dan?
I'm doing great today. I'm having a good day, actually.
Yeah, same here. Been a long one, but this is probably going to be the better part of my day.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
So, Ron, you are a comedian and a magician, and I've seen you perform, and it's always a lot of fun. So just as a way of introduction, tell everybody where you're from and maybe how you ended up where you are and all that.
Okay, so my name is Ron Giesek. I'm from Redding, California. I've pretty much lived in Northern California my whole life with the exception of military time. Probably the comedic part of what I do, and there's a lot of that in my everyday life, comes a natural extension of me being an overly talkative class clown. Somewhere along the line, that got galvanized into storytelling. And really, that was where the vehicle for sleight of hand and, you know, under the larger umbrella of magic came in. I always liked the stories that could be told more than trying to just simply be some street demigod that walks around trying to impress girls.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So where does this entertainment bug come from? Do you come from an entertainment background?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of latent musicianship in my family, and I am actually a musician first. I play 9 instruments, and I do sing. I started out essentially in the church, and sorry about that noise, and it continues there as well, which also colors some of my other overarching principles, but not a whole bunch of entertainers per se. I am, in a sense, I'm a little bit of a standout or an outlier in that regard.
I mean, you seem like a very entertaining guy when I've seen you, that you really, you know, capture your time on the stage. You own the stage, and that's always great for any kind of performer to be able to do. So, and I got to tell you really quickly that one of the pastors at our church, he always has a problem with the words magician and musician. So he'll mean one, but he'll say the other. And it's kind of funny.
Oh, tale as old as time. Happens all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens, too, is many people like to throw the impressive line in, and they'll say, oh, no, I'm not going to say magician. I will say prestidigitator, just to prove that they knew the word. I don't know.
Yeah, but then you got to have those big abracadabra kind of words that, you know, prove you're a magician, right?
Well, there's, of course, that, but I do love big words, and prestidigitation is one of the words that will show up in my show, along with artifice, ruse, and subterfuge.
Yeah, you're way over my head right now, but I do like using those words in Scrabble, which never happened, so, you know. But yeah. You know. So how did you get involved in magic, doing this magician stuff?
Well, part of it's an extension of what I think actually is a natural extension of a phase that little boys go through around the third grade. But actually, prior to that, prior to my being 6 years old, my father, when we still lived in Los Angeles, he took me to Busch Gardens.
Oh, yeah.
A now defunct, you know, theme park that was, you know, sponsored by the Anheuser-Busch Corporation. Real beautiful place. And I remember watching a magic show with him, a stage magic show. And I remember specifically 2 things. And I don't know if this is trauma, but there was a trick that went bad. It was one of those box illusions that had a compartment that sprung open and exposed a Critical Secret, and I remember this, and the other was my dad accidentally, he smoked back then, and during this moment where I'm freaking out, I accidentally got a little burn on my arm because we were all reacting to it.
Oh, my goodness.
But it went from there. We would go back home, and there was a show on TV called The Magic Land of Alakazam with Mark Wilson, but then I saw a guy named Doug Henning. And Doug Henning was the happy hippie. He was the buck tooth guy with long hair, and he wore kind of like the Age of Aquarius kind of clothing. And he was just happy. He just wanted to entertain and tell a story. And he didn't care whether you thought he was, you know, whether he had existential power. He just wanted to be in the moment. And I thought he is the coolest thing I ever saw. And it always stuck with me.
Yeah, I always kind of thought he was like if Sonny Bono did magic, that's who he would end up as, you know, like
very much so.
So along the way, I mean, you've done magic and you add humor to your act. I've seen your act, and why that? Is that a common thing for magicians to do, or is that more unique?
Well, it is, and actually, you'll see more humor in a lot of bad magic acts, believe it or not. I actually prefer strategically placed humor. So magicians, as a general rule, and this is more general the older I get doing what I do, we already are facing an uphill battle not being associated with the classic, stereotypical middle-aged guy with a modicum of skill and personality attempting to do the kid's birthday party. And we really do get associated with clowns. And so when I perform in public places like festivals, a lot of people assume that I am at that festival to simply be an entertainer for the smallest alone. And people will bring their kids and go, here, stay here and watch the magician. I'm going to walk around. And I have to tell the parents, I go, you don't realize that I'm going to blow you away too, right? That I'm not here just to pull flagrantly colored scarves out of my hand and make your kids go, ooh, and ah, I can do that. And I do that, but there is an intellectual component to what I do that once I achieve that goal of convincing them that I am better than the assumptions that they made, then there is a place to weave humor in. But to me, humor is a kind of a counterweight to the intellectual side of the things.
Yeah, a couple questions came to my mind. One is the humor a type of deflect? You know, how in magic you want to get people's attention somewhere else? And
misdirection?
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Well, so probably at first, and I actually reflect back to, you'll hear a lot of really bad jokes with a lot of less than stellar magicians because they will use that technique first to cover up things. But I learned probably 25 years ago, I came in to understand people's psychological ebbs and flows and realize that there's abject murder I can get away with right under your nose that merely depends on the parabolic up and down way that humans naturally pay attention. And I've learned to exploit those, but I prefer to exploit them in different ways so that the humor for me is simply to maybe pop bubbles of tension and or prove that I'm not just a stoic.
Yeah, I like that. That kind of springboards into the other question I had, which is, did it take you a while to figure out how important humor would be to what you're doing? You know what I mean? Or did you just come out of the gate doing magic and humor, or did it evolve?
Well, so when you first come out doing magic, it is the most nerve-wracking thing in the world. And it is comparable to doing comedy without magic, only because many times when you walk out on stage, there is an adversarial hill that you have to climb.
Yeah.
You have a group of people that you need to get them to like you. And if you're not Jerry Seinfeld or Dave Chappelle, then you, and they go, you're an unknown quantity. It is the same with magicians. So I try not to start out personally with the humor. I try to start out with some sort of conversation that we can both be on at the same time. There's some commonality that I establish. Do you like magic? Or I'll say, have you ever seen a card trick? And they'll say, oh, yeah. And I said, have you ever seen a really good one that you will never forget? And at that point, they will go, well, no, probably not. I had a drunk uncle at a family reunion that, you know, did bad ones. And I'll go, well, hopefully, how about if I attempt to exceed that expectation? And it kind of creates this little social contract. And then I go in and pretty soon they go, oh, okay, well, this guy is not the norm. He is not what I expected. And then when I feel those walls go down, I can start moving into some of those other areas. Humor was just one thing. The other was tactile, touching people, but not, and when I say that, I mean building enough trust that I'm allowed to put something in their hand and grab their wrist. And after I learned to grab to people, let me grab their wrist. Of course, I learned to steal wrist watches. Then I learned to wind up with a wrist watch on my own wrist without them ever knowing, one, that their watch was gone, and two, that I'd put it on my wrist. And then when I get to this thing and they're making all these assumptions that, oh man, he must be using trick cards. And those sponge balls, there must be some quality to them there. Oh, and the cups have to have trap doors in them. And then at the end of all those assumptions that hopefully I destroy through certain processes. So you create maybe like a theory. I would suddenly point at my wrist and go, is this yours by any chance? And I've had people spit their drink clear across the table. And ironically, this happened at a banquet table one night when I took a man's watch, wound up with it on my wrist. When I said that, he was drinking a beer and he spit it like across the table in a spray. And the irony is he turned out to be my boss, and he was the assistant chief of probation at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And I went to work. I went to work in the juvenile system, and my application was actually in the hopper when I did this banquet, and I took his watch unbeknownst to anyone. And he saw my name, he saw my application, and it was weird. But when people go, how'd you get a job at probation and get through the system? I go, stealing.
It's good. So you always have something clever to say there, which is pretty cool. Now, you know, a lot of magicians, and I've seen a lot of them over in my life, and the same with comedy, with comedians, there's always this, like, many, many roads you can travel. You can go down a clean road, which is what we're talking about. You can go down kind of a naughty road or even a raunchy road.
Yeah.
I've seen, obviously, comedians who do that, and I've even seen magicians who do that. It's probably not blatant, as blatant in the magician community as it is with comedians. But my question to you is, why the choice to go down a more cleaner path with what you do?
Well, okay, so that is my baseline. I mean, I'm a person in my life that, you know, in my weaker and more deleterious moments, I've cursed with the worst of them, you know?
Yeah.
And but at the same time, presentationally, it was never a natural thing for me. Even if I was at my in my worst mental condition, I'm not saying people that do that that work blue are that. I'm saying in my case, there was never a point where I was comfortable just firing off vulgarities over a microphone, over a loudspeaker. It goes against my composite. It goes against my faith. But it if I didn't have that, I already have this sort of default discomfort with it. Second of all, I have a great example. It never ever worked against me. As a matter of fact, you can look at the career of comedian Nate Bargatze and see exactly just how meteorically high a clean comedian can sail into the sky and become an almost household name. And when I set up my shows, the only concerns I ever get is I will have people will contact me and say, okay, we want to come to your show. Is it suitable for children? I never get the opposite question. And I never have them say, look, we've got some preteen kids, you know, they're on the edge or whatever, please tell me you're going to drop some F-bombs, because this is the thing that's missing from their, like, from their framework. And right. I never get that. Or a better example, I have these friends, two friends specifically, they're married, but they are licensed marriage and family therapists. And I asked them one time, I said, I got a question for you. I go, when you sit down and you're dealing with and helping a couple navigate the turmoil of the, you know, the crucible and the fighting and the torn fabric of trust in relationships, do you ever put your clipboard down and say, I got it. What this relationship is missing is alcohol. and of course, that whole lead up just feels absurd. But, and for me, I never have had a gig where the fact that I wasn't going to be working blue or using vulgarity was going to be considered a downside. So
that's great. And that kind of takes me to another question, which is, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but would you say that working cleaner has opened up more opportunities for you to perform, for gig opportunities?
Oh yeah. I think the default setting is all the doors are open. I could go on a stage and be part of a lineup of people in a crowd that might work blue. I typically don't find myself in those scenarios very much, but I could because they've already got the limits. They're already working the parameters, the absolute stretching the limits, and then I just walk in and hopefully can fill the middle ground.
That's great. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about any struggles that you've experienced along the way.
Well, I think that the struggles is attempting to, and I think that actors, comedians, musicians, everybody wants to come up with, they want to be original, you know, they don't want to play cover tunes. And
yeah,
so
right.
A struggle, but a good struggle, was about 9 years ago, I decided to start doing my own ticketed shows. And that meant that I was going to start creating themes, and I was going to sit down and do what my number one talent is, and that's writing. And I realized I've got great memorization skills. I'm a pretty good orator. I can take what I write and I can take these card tricks and I can turn them into these epic journeys instead of, oh, here, pick a card. Is this your card? And you'll see, I know you've seen me do a couple of routines that the way I do those are what I call under fire, generic, guerrilla warfare routines. Those are when I can get up in anywhere and do them that way with that rhetorical twist. If you come to my Christmas show that I got coming up, you're going to see a much more refined, literary and intellectual take that, I was inspired just real quick here. So the struggle was, yes, to find who I was in this. So when I started out, I was doing things like making dollar bills float in the air, because that impressed people. You'd stand in a doorway and people go, oh, how do you do that? And then I realized there is nothing about my personality that enhances. So then I realized I like clever things. I liked the history of the Old West. I liked the history of the card table. I liked the history of the consequences of gambling, both physical and spiritual. And then I also like the nature of storytelling. And so I would see different magicians like Lance Burton, and I'd go, ah, oh, man, he's clever and he's cute and he's handsome. And I would borrow some of his jokes and think, yeah, man, okay, that works. And somewhere along the line, I saw a magician. He's passed away, but he was also an actor. Not a good actor. I'm going to go on the record right now. Ricky Jay Ricky Jay was not a good actor.
Yeah, well, now that he's dead, I guess.
Yeah,
okay.
He's gone.
He's not going to come after
I'm going
right?
to kick. Yeah. Yeah, he won't mind it. He was crass enough to kick the dead, so
I'll
do it.
That's very brave of you, Ron. Very brave, yeah.
But, however, he was one of the greatest proponents with cards ever, and I saw a show of his from the 90s called Ricky Jay and His 52 Assistants, and it was an off-Broadway show.
Oh, I love it.
And it changed my life. I went, I can't believe he literally just walked out and did a PhD level intellectual presentational bit that covered gambling and history and poetry and very strange history, and then closes out with the best routine in the world, the cups and balls, and does a history lesson of them. And I watched it, my jaw dropped, and it wasn't that the tricks were so great. It was how he curated them. And I went, that's me, not to be exactly like him. And once I started, I took one step in that direction, suddenly I became my own man. And so the struggle was to find my own voice in this. And now I have my own voice. Tricks come along, I see advertisements, and I'll see a trick where there'll be some guy on the street, and it'll be just some crazy trick where somebody takes a card out of a deck and they put it back in the deck, and it disappears and it winds up on the inside of a windshield on a nearby car.
Right.
So great. I'm blown away. I don't know how it's done, and I don't care because it doesn't fit my personality. And so I have a very narrow set of parameters for a trick. And so all these tricks come out and I don't want to know how they're done if I'm not ever going to employ them in my act, because I kind of like having a little mystery left in my own life, too.
Well, and I love what you're saying, because, I mean, we're talking about magic, obviously, on this episode. Mm-hmm. But comedians who are listening to this, this is something I try to convey in these comedy classes that I teach. And it's something I had to learn, similar to what you're talking about. I don't think you use the words the hard way, but I had to learn this the hard way, because I came out of an acting background and did a lot of acting. And so when I first started doing stand-up comedy, I was acting the way I thought a stand-up comic is supposed to act on stage. I would move my arms a certain way, or stand a certain way, or deliver, you know, my jokes a certain way or whatever. And it took me a good, 2 years of performing a lot over that time to finally, what we talk about in the comedy world, I'm sure it's like what you're talking about, mm-hmm. find my voice. What is my voice? Who am I when I'm on stage? And that led me to not really develop a character, but actually get rid of characters and just become who I was, which, you know, as I was kind of hitting my stride here, middle-aged, overweight, balding guy who's married with adult kids. And so the core of my act follows that theme. That's where my parameters are.
Exactly.
And it's important for us to learn that, because that's where I think that's what makes us feel comfortable then as a performer. We don't have to rely on some, I don't know, obscure thing to try to get the point across. We just be ourselves and figure out a way to do the magic or the comedy or whatever it is.
Yeah. And comedians, I attempted straight comedy in the 90s when I was asked to host comedy nights here in Reading at the local Holiday Inn. I mean, this is way back in the day. And some of those guys that came through, and women, I've seen them show up on clip reels and things. I don't know their names anymore. And I was asked to do it because I do have comedic instincts. I'm not a good actor. I don't like acting. I don't like being in plays. But I can do comedy. And I definitely understand how hard it actually is, because when they asked me to host comedy night, they said, "Oh, all you need is 5 minutes of material." And I went, "I didn't even prepare, because I thought, ah, oh, that's that's absolutely nothing. You know, this is
anyone can do that. Right?
Yeah. any guy walking down the street, 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Let me tell you what 5 minutes sounds like. 5 minutes sounds like, you know, that you know that pair of eyes looking up at Abraham's bosom, going, "Hey, am I ever getting out of here?" And but I'm just telling you.
I love that you're bringing that up, because it's, you know, it's almost like anything in life, I guess. Until you actually do it, you know, you don't realize how difficult it is to make it look good, to make it look like you've been doing this a long time, or to make it appear as if you're just so witty, you're just coming up with these hilarious jokes off the cuff, when in reality you spent months, maybe even years in some cases, you know, crafting a joke that will work in your 30-minute set or whatever it is. You know?
Oh, yeah. And believe it or not, the crossover of magic and comedy, the one thing you definitely learn a degree of crowd work. And I know there are people that specialize in that. There's this guy floating around on my social media page. His name's Carl something. You probably know who he is. And his whole vibe is he's doing crowd work. He asks somebody where they're from. And I think he's a single guy. And so what he picks some, he'll pick some, there'll be some beautiful girl sitting there. And somehow he has this weird way of going, so what do you do for a living? And she'll say something like, you know, it'll be some obscure thing. Like, I don't know. I do data processing. He'll go, well, that's what I've dreamed of doing that. And, you know, he's immediately moving, but he's very clever, but there is crowd work when you do, like I've done some outdoor shows recently. I did one up in Dunsmuir, and when you're performing, you have people comment on how you're doing something, or they come up with, sometimes you get a great, great line. You'll get a line from an audience member that you go, can I have that? Can I please use that and keep it? And they'll, well, yeah, they don't even know what they did.
Right.
But,
right. I think people are eager and happy to say, hey, I helped Ron with his act, you know, and
oh yeah,
like, you know, 3 years from now when you're on, you know, the Tonight Show, who's ever going to be hosting it then, you know, and they'll say, oh yeah, I helped give him that joke. And that's fine. You know, it's, you know, they didn't write your whole act, but
well, I had somebody on my day job. I have a very, very procedurally boring day job. I work for the county. I don't need to go into all that detail, but I know I was sitting there one day and, you get cynical about office life. You know, that's how the Dilbert principle got written by Scott Adams. Yeah. But I remember we were talking about how the overarching philosophy of our office is that we're supposed to go above and beyond. And my coworker says, yes, as long as you don't go above and beyond. She came up the rear with that whole follow-up line, and I went, I'm keeping that. I'm using that.
Yeah, no, that's good.
And she didn't even realize that's that she good. Constructed kind of a cynical one-liner for me to use later.
I love it. Now, I want to give you some time here before I end this. Not yet, but I want to give you some time just to talk about how people can find you and what you got coming up, especially for people who are going to be hearing this in the Reading area. But before we get there, I asked you about some of the struggles you've had. What about any highlights you've had in your career so far?
So I thought about this. There have been so many, but many, many years ago, and let's see, I'll be delicate. I won't. We had there was a very, very unfortunate and many years ago now, we're talking 25 years ago, and I was probably at some of the height of my skills. I had gotten there was a high profile death. It was an accidental death, but it was in an official capacity in a first responder sort of scenario, right? And it'd been on the news. And out of the blue, I get a call from a family member saying, hey, you know, you probably heard about this. And I said, oh, absolutely, I have, you know, and, you know, bless you guys, you know, my prayers are with you. And they said, well, we've been through a lot, and with the media, and we're this certain date, the funeral is over, and we're having a family get together, and we just wanted to do something enjoyable, and would you just come and do this? And I went, and I stood in a living room, and my comedic skills, my one-liners, and the natural stuff that can kick on, you know, I had the widow of this high profile thing at the time, situation. I had her on the floor in tears, gasping for air, and the momentum was in my favor, and she was crying, and she was so helpless, laughing, And I was, you know, I was really good on the one-liners. I was quick on my feet at that time for that style I was doing. And I still to this day have in my scrapbook a card from the family of how impactful that moment was. And I just loved that I was able to be a part of this mosaic of joy. There was a lot of trauma, but they were very much a tight-knit group and a wonderful, beautiful picture of a family. But I just, that moment, and I still see that woman in a certain context to this day, and she remembers it, but nothing was like that moment. We could talk about it now, and it's nostalgically nice, but that moment, that's probably one of the greatest moments that I didn't realize I learned card tricks and comedy to do this type of thing, but I'll never forget that.
Yeah, right. It's amazing when something like that happens, and it solidifies what an unbelievable opportunity we have if we have any kind of these skills, magic, comedy, singing, whatever it is, where we can be in a setting where it, like what you're just describing, dramatically impacts either one person's life or a few people or the whole group. And to walk away from that and realize, wow, whatever I brought, you know, lifted it lifted the atmosphere of the room, which is an amazing blessing that we have for it us is. And for those that, you know, are blessed by the experience. Yeah. So, Ron, will you tell people, you know, about you? How can we find you? You got some shows coming up, that kind of stuff.
All right. Well, I'm on social media, but if I say my name, so if you're listening to this podcast, just look at the front page of the podcast if you want to get the spelling of my name. I am on Instagram as...
that's a good comment because it took me like five or six times to figure out how your name is pronounced. So, yeah.
No, yeah. Not just pronounced, but spell. And the thing about my name, because it's spelled, the last name is spelled G-I-E-S-E-C-K-E. When I'm in a noisy environment and there's somebody asking me to spell my name on the phone, everything is an E sound. So I have G-I-E-C-K-E. All you can hear is E-E-E, and it's really hard phonetically. I almost want to go Gulf, Indigo, Echo. You know, I want to start doing law enforcement thing. So I'm on Instagram as Ronnie, R-O-N-N-I-E. If you just spell R-O-N-N-I-E and then type G-I, you'll find me because I'm the only one like that anywhere on Instagram. I'm under Ron Giesick on Facebook. I think I'm at Ronnie Giesick on TikTok for whatever cordless bungee jumping into the abyss of uselessness that is for me. But for my shows, let's see here. The big shows I have are November 29th. This is the day after Thanksgiving, the 30th and December 1st at the Arts Theater, which is on Hirsch Court, Unit B in Anderson, California, which is just south of Reading, geographically, if you need that reference. And it's called In Search of Christmas Past. And it's a sleight of hand saga, very much based on a couple of things. The way that redemptive stories seem to have threefold plans to them, you know, like a death, burial, and resurrection. The story of Scrooge, very much Christmas past, Christmas present, Christmas yet to come. And it seems like that a lot of tricks and a lot of routines have three phases in them to feel complete. And so I'm running with that feeling of three and the redemptive process. So there's those shows and those tickets for that. You can go to theartstheater.org. And if you spell theater, spell it with an R-E at the end in the old classic setting. As far as an unofficial or an informal appearance, I'm going to be at Shop Around the Corner Bookstore, which is 1430 Butte Street in Reading. I'm doing a live, it's sort of a quid pro quo live appearance. I'm letting people know that I'm going to be there and you can come by and see me perform a few things. And you can also check out a really great little book nook right there near the, is it the Oddfellows Hall or the IOOF, one of those, somewhere in the newly renovated, downtown, Reading area. So that's the immediate things I have. And then I have private shows.
When is that show?
Thank you. Saturday, November 23rd, from 1 to 4, I'll just be hanging out behind a table. You can come in
Great.
And I'll show you some cool stuff and you can, hopefully, patronize the establishment. The owner, super sweet, super nice, and just a lovely soul.
Well, Ron, it's been great chatting with you today about magic and about comedy, what you do in your magic show, and how you like to lean clean. And anybody listening, if you want to see Ron, it's a great show. You'll have a great time. All ages are going to enjoy what he does, and it's a lot of fun. So check out those shows coming up he talked about at Arts Theater and the little intimate one at the shop around the corner. That'll be good. And check them out online.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Ron, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Dan. Thank you so very much.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Just Pure Laughs, the Clean Comedy Podcast. And we'll see you next time.